week. I think it's possible.
That is despite the NBA earlier canceling the first 2 weeks of the season as players and owners bicker about revenue sharing and the salary cap. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD2, New Rochelle.
This is Charles Buscemi at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's World Headquarters in Purchase, New York. I've been on the radio in New York State for over 25 years, during which our nation has gone through many changes and been confronted by financial upheaval and political turmoil. Through it all, I've been privileged to enjoy the confidence of many thousands of radio listeners on WVOX and WVIP who have bestowed their confidence and trust in me and my Morgan Stanley Smith Barney Associates. My business card says Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, but to those careful and astute investors who have entrusted a good portion of their hard-earned wealth to me and mine over the years, I become so much more than that. If your portfolio and holdings are in need of a timely review, I'd be very glad to arrange a conference where we could sit down and for no cost or obligation review what your financial and investment goals are. We're at 2000 Westchester Avenue, right off the Hutch in Westchester County. You can call me direct at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's headquarters at 914-225-7158. Once again, that's 914-225-7158. My secretary's name is Sandra, and she'll be glad to set up an appointment. 914-225-7158.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We've got a wet day coming up on your Thursday. Expected occasional rain and drizzle being caused by a series of weak low-pressure systems traveling along a stationary front that lies from just over northern West Virginia through eastern Pennsylvania and northern New Jersey and right through most of Westchester County, especially to the north, and then travels into New England. Along that frontal system, areas of low pressure will develop and move to the northeast and give us occasional rain and drizzle, and will last right in through this evening. Then we get into some clearing overnight with some colder readings towards daybreak. There is a possibility of a light frost, especially in some colder northern spots. But daytime on Friday, we do get into sunny weather as high pressure builds in for just a day. Coastal low could give us some rain on Saturday before clearing on Sunday and early next week. So our forecast calling for periods of rain and drizzle today, temperatures in the mid-50s. Tonight it's going to be cloudy for this evening, then partly cloudy overnight as rain ends and moves east. Breezy and cooler, nighttime lows in the mid-30s, with a frost advisory in effect from 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. Friday. Friday looks sunny, though. Temperatures will reach the lower 50s, and at night clear to partly cloudy down in the upper 30s. Saturday's going to be mostly cloudy with a possibility of some rain, upper 40s. Sunday back to sunshine, lower 50s. Halloween Monday, partly sunny, mid-50s. We open up November with partial sun in the mid-50s on Tuesday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point? I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Cara DioGuardi, E.L. Doctorow, W.C. Fields, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy. There's always something happening right here at 1460 on New York's last independent community radio station for you and yours, WVOX and WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, October 27th, 2011, the 34th day of autumn. The trees continue to shut down. Photosynthesis will wait for about 4.5 months to resume. And those birds that migrate have pretty much up and left by now. There's still an occasional egret in Glen Island Park in New Rochelle, but soon enough, they will all be gone. Hours of daylight continue to shorten. Chill continues to inhabit the air. The leaves are near their peak autumnal display. Magnificent. Enjoy the season. We have lost 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 36 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. We're running at about an hour a month of lost daylight. The sun rose at 7:20 this morning. It will set at 5:58 this evening. We will have 10 hours and 48 minutes of daylight today. Daylight savings time ends on November 6th, which is a week from this coming Sunday, and the sun will be setting around 4:30 in the afternoon after that. The short, dark days of winter will not be far behind, so enjoy this autumn while you can. The moon rose at 8:22 this morning. It will set at 6:25 this evening. You know what that means. When the moon is up during the day and invisible at night, that is the new moon phase, and in fact, the new moon did occur yesterday. Next full moon is November 10th. Next full phase is November 10th, which is the date of our next program, so get ready to howl with me on William O'Shaughnessy's great radio station 2 weeks from today. Next high tides in New Rochelle. They will turn high at 11:52 in about an hour and a half. 11:32, about an hour and 20 minutes in Yonkers. They are quite high now. 9:56 is when it turned high. 10:24 in Dobbs Ferry, which is in about 13 minutes. Tarrytown, 10:40. Havistraw, 11:06. Peekskill, 11:19. So tides are high right now. Now, a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Marine Lance Corporal Jordan S. Bastian, age 19, of Pekin, Illinois. He was with the 1st Marine Division. He was killed in combat in Helmand Province on October 23rd. Today is, what did we say, the 27th? That's 4 days ago. Sergeant First Class Christopher B. Domage, age 29, of San Diego, California. He was with the 75th Ranger Regiment, one of 3 soldiers killed when their assault force triggered a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on October 22nd. The other two were Private First Class Christopher A. Horns, age 20, of Colorado Springs, Colorado, also with the 75th Rangers. And the third was First Lieutenant Ashley I. White, age 24, from Alliance, Ohio. She was with the North Carolina National Guard, attached as a cultural support team member. And I always say when a woman is killed, it's just there's something even wronger about that. I mean, it's terribly wrong when people are killed at war, but that's the way the world is. But when a woman is killed, that just hurts me just a little bit more. A 24-year-old attractive lieutenant. Corporal Paul A. Rivera, age 26, of Round Rock, Texas. He was with the 18th Military Police Brigade, killed in a vehicle rollover during an attack in Logar Province on October 22nd. Navy Chief Petty Officer Raymond J. Border, age 31, of West Lafayette, Ohio. He was with the Navy Mobile Construction Battalion No. 74, helping in provincial reconstruction in Paktika Province. He died while he was assessing a route in Paktika Province on October 19th. Staff Sergeant Jorge M. Oliveira, age 33, of Newark, New Jersey. He was with the New Jersey Army National Guard, killed by a roadside bomb in Paktika Province on October 19th. Specialist Michael D. Elm, age 25, of Phoenix, Arizona. He was with the 1st Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Coast on October 14th. Staff Sergeant Robert Brian Cowdery, age 39, of Atwater, Ohio. He was with the 82nd Airborne. He was a medic. He was killed while attempting to evacuate under fire several coalition soldiers wounded during heavy fighting in Kunar province on October 13th. Specialist Jeremiah Thor Sancho, age 23, of Palm Bay, Florida, with the 10th Mountain Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar province, October 13th. Marine Lance Corporal Scott Daniel Harper, age 21, of Winston, Georgia. He's with the 2nd Marine Division, killed in combat in Helmand province on October 13th. Staff Sergeant Houston Mark Taylor, age 25, of Hearst, Texas. His name is Houston, and he's a Texan, so I suppose that's why he got that name. He was with the 25th Infantry, killed by small arms fire in Kunar province on October 13th. And finally, Sergeant Nathan Lee Wyrick, age 34, of Enumclaw, Washington. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, killed in combat in Kandahar province on October 10th. These 12 American servicemen and one servicewoman were alive on the date of our last broadcast, a scant 2 weeks ago. Average is one a day. So who will die today? Or will there be two today and none tomorrow? Or five tomorrow and a few days without deaths? Or will this upcoming 2 weeks be particularly bloody and even more will fall? It is gratifying that our last troops will leave Iraq by the end of the year, just over 2 months from now. We can only hope that those in Afghanistan will be gone before long and America's military adventures will come to an end and permit the Arab Spring to take its course. Surely we can help with that. We got bin Laden, we showed the world that there are dire consequences to those who mess with us, and now it is time to allow the world to progress. Bad news for the corporations which manufacture the tools of war. Those corporations profit mightily from war and will continue to exert intense lobbying pressure on our Congress to find other excuses to use bombs, bullets, rocket-propelled grenades, and drones. Think Halliburton, Dick Cheney's company. Perhaps the biggest, but only one of a number of military contractors who will, when wars come to an end, they look for ways to sell their stuff. And what better way than to start other wars and to lobby Congress to do so? We can only hope that sanity will prevail at last and that wars will be a means of last resort and not motives for profit. I don't say we should abolish war. We can never abolish war. We are warlike. We like to fight. We like to kill. We do. But a means of last resort, not motives for profit and not for fun. And a reminder, now listen to these numbers, $3.5 billion, that's $3.51 billion, was spent last year in lobbying our senators and congressmen, and also there are 244 millionaires in Congress. There are 435 representatives, 100 senators, that's 535, so 244 is 45% of our federal representatives are worth over $1 million, and some a lot more. Just a little perspective, our local congressman, Nita Lowey, is worth upwards of $39 million. That's not bad for Ms. Lowey, but let's just understand that it's not just Republicans that are rich. When we say $3.51 billion, that one at the end, the $3.51 billion, represents 1% of $1 billion, and that's $10 million. So $3.51 billion. Please don't forget our troops, and don't forget that more fall all too frequently. They deserve at least to be remembered. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. We have about a minute, so I'll get started at this, and we'll come back to it. While I'm at statistics, are you really comfortable supporting the 400 Americans who own more wealth than half of all Americans combined? If you are, then by all means, continue to support the National Republican Party, which is not coincidentally controlled by, you guessed it, those 400, plus many other rich people. I repeat, as always, when getting on this subject, that I admire those people who have amassed wealth, even millions, and we'll come back to that point. I would do nothing to take that money away from them. Okay, you're listening to WVOX AM 1460, originating in New Rochelle, New York. You're listening online at www.wvox.com. This program is Environmental Sound. I am Bob Lebensold. Guest later on in the program will be James Gleick, author James Gleick, and we will be right back.
Business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD2.
From the Fox Business Network, positive news from across the pond as the bulls off and running on Wall Street. Eurozone leaders agreed to cut Greece's debt and give the troubled nation $148 billion in new aid. Europe's banks, meanwhile, will take a 50% loss on their Greek debt holdings. Just past 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 235 points. The U.S. economy grew at the fastest pace in a year during the third quarter. GDP expanded by 2.5%. That almost doubles the rate of the second quarter. Consumer spending climbed to its highest rate since the end of last year. Personal consumption represents the biggest part of GDP. And though fewer Americans joined the unemployment line last week, initial claims continue to remain high. 402,000 people filed for first-time benefits. A bigger drop was forecast. The four-week moving average, which smooths out volatility, did come in higher. The average is considered a better measure of the labor markets. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Robert Gray.
Can't believe I'm pulling this off after all these years. So glad I got that personal loan from One Main Financial.
Can I take this blindfold off?
Let me help you.
We're going on a cruise.
No, dear. The honeymoon we never took.
You've made promises, we can help you keep them. We are One Main Financial, providing personalized loan solutions with flexible payment options. Go to onemainfinancial.com or call 1-855-321-MAIN. One Main Financial, your needs, your goals, your dreams. Offer subject to restrictions and requirements of the licensee. For licensing information, visit our website or call us.
Here, there, and everywhere.
Every day, every night.
We're number one for fun.
At work, at home.
WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX. Okay, we are back. I was giving you a bit of an editorial and the way I feel about economics and so forth. And let's just back up a little bit. I repeat, as always, when I get on this subject, I admire those people who have amassed wealth, even millions, and I would do nothing to take that money away from them. More power to you. Their offspring, who do nothing but spend and protect it, maybe by supporting a hefty inheritance tax on those scions who would be flipping burgers if not for their industrious parents or grandparents. George W. Bush comes to mind. But the men and women who have earned it, never. They are living the American dream. I respect and admire them for their hard work and character. But hundreds of millions of dollars and lobbying Congress to protect that wealth and make it that much harder for others of initiative to gain wealth, give me a break. Give anyone a break who wants to make money and finds it tighter and tighter and tighter. They're entitled. Let them have it. That is the American dream, not to just amass it and be greedy. So who controls the Republican Party? Well, I'm sure there are some Democrats among these. Hang on a second. The 400 own $1.57 trillion. The 400 people in America own $1.57 trillion. That's $1,000 million, and then half again. That is who controls the Republican Party, and as I say, I'm sure there are some Democrats among them, but look up the percentages if you want that particular statistic. My greatest puzzlement is how they get working people to support them when they are the ones stealing the fruits of your hard labor. They are the ones, and we're talking now about the National Republican Party, they are the ones who buy our elected officials and the rich people. That are making a mockery of the land of Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and Bob Lebensold. And they get a lot of people to support them. And somehow they trash Mr. Obama, who's just trying to do a good job. I realize it's tough, of course. Okay, time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions. And you have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. Okay, let's start. We saw a something down on the Jersey Shore. It was a Lucille Ball, call her an impersonator or an emulator or whatever. She's just very much like Lucille Ball. First, a word about the Surflight Theater in Beach Haven on Long Beach Island on the Jersey Shore. This is a great summer stock venue with professional actors, a fine theater which stages their productions very well. Should you visit the Jersey Shore, most specifically Beach Haven, by all means, check out this theater, whatever they're playing. But now to the play. Suzanne LaRouche is the official Lucy performer. That's in quotes. She co-wrote this with Lucy Arnaz, Lucille Ball's daughter. Ms. Arnaz also directed. And as chance would have it, the night we attended was the 60th anniversary of the premiere of I Love Lucy. That date was October 15th, 1951. We saw it on October 15th, 2011. What a coincidence that was. 60th anniversary of the first showing of I Love Lucy. Watching and listening to Suzanne LaRouche as Lucille Ball, one could easily believe she was, in fact, Lucy. The makeup, wig, facial expressions, and voice were transporting. Lucy was in the room. She spoke about being mentored by Buster Keaton in mime. She did a bit about Vita Meta Vegemin. I got it out. One of Lucy's best-known skits. Then the actual clip was shown, and the congruence was striking. She recounted Lucy's early days as model, actress, then TV comedian, and spoke briefly about her marriage to Desi Arnaz. She brought Lucy down to earth as a person without pretension who happened to be so good at what she did that she became iconic. The fact that Lucy Arnaz co-wrote and directed gives this piece an air of authenticity, and I feel I know Lucille Ball as I never have. Now, obviously, this play is not available up here, so you can't see it, but if you happen to see Lucille Ball, Thank You for Asking by Suzanne LaRouche anywhere, certainly, if you're an I Love Lucy fan, you have to see it. If not, then you might want to see it. All right, two more quick reviews before we get to our break and then to James Gleick. We saw the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt. Billy Beane is the current general manager of the Oakland Athletics, and this is his story. It's a baseball story, yes, but more from a behind-the-scenes business political perspective, actually. Billy Beane, played by Brad Pitt, is a type A personality. He makes decisions based as much on confidence and strength of personality as rationality. In fact, his rationality is questioned by several people during the course of the movie. He learned of something called the sabermetric principle, which was originated by Bill James, of maximizing payroll by buying undervalued players, and he was apparently the first to commit to the system. Best available information is that his current salary is $500,000 as general manager of the Athletics. The movie reveals that he was offered $12.5 million by the Boston Red Sox to take over there as GM, an offer he turned down. Very interesting in the film why he makes that decision, how he makes that decision, who he is, and actually that even though he's a type A guy and, you know, they can push people around, is a loving family man, as they often are. But he took the 2006, this is Billy Beane, Athletics to the fifth best record in the major leagues on a payroll which ranked 24th out of 30. The Red Sox, on the other hand, adopted the principles pioneered by Billy Beane, and they won their first World Series since 1918 in 2004. Pitt is a good actor. Philip Seymour Hoffman in a key role as field manager adds greatly. Well played and well directed. 3 stars. If you miss it in the theater, put it on your Netflix list. Okay, our final review of the day, and then we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with James Gleick. We saw The Mountaintop on Broadway with Samuel L. Jackson and Angela Bassett, and they could play in Mary Had a Little Lamb. You'd have to go see that pair, so go see them just on the actors. Now, this play is actually billed as a reimagining of Martin Luther King's last night before he was assassinated. It's not conjecture about reality, but it's a playwright's fantasy. This is not something that ever really could have happened, but it's interestingly done. Two-person play, and what two actors could you possibly want more on your stage than Samuel L. Jackson and Angela Bassett? And they do deliver, especially Ms. Bassett. Perhaps that is because we compare Jackson's portrayal to the persona we are so familiar with, while the one created from whole cloth by Ms. Bassett can be perceived without preconception. Jackson did not try to imitate King so much. He just he was King in a different sense. But it's a little disconcerting, I would say, to watch somebody playing Martin Luther King, whom we know so well through his speeches, and yet he doesn't really ring true, like, for instance, the Lucille Ball gal who we just spoke about. Dr. King is portrayed as a man, not a god, although God does make an appearance, not corporeally, of course. Bassett's character, Camille, is a salty-mouthed chambermaid, not exactly what she seems. Dr. King is a man with feelings, faults, deep commitment, and premonition of his impending assassination. King, the man, is frightened by each clap of thunder on this stormy night. It even makes him wheeze. He's attracted to Kameh, although the main intimacy they share is smoking from the same cigarette. King, speaking sadly about white men, says they hate so easily and we love too much. When Kameh catches herself in random philosophy, she admits she is speaking nonsense and will be right back.
National news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A rally on Wall Street, the Dow up 215 points on news of a debt deal in Europe, and our economy appears to be backing away from another recession. Fox News Radio, Steve Taylor in D.C.
The U.S. economy grew at an annual rate of 2.5% in the July to September period, helped by stronger spending from consumers and businesses. That's almost double the growth rate in the spring quarter, according to the Commerce Department. And the number of people signing up for unemployment benefits dropped a little last week to 402,000.
Also announced this morning, pending home sales down for the third straight month. The UN Security Council has just voted unanimously to end the no-fly zone over Libya as of Halloween in eastern Turkey. Rescue workers still searching for survivors of Sunday's earthquake, saving one 19-year-old man today. The confirmed death toll, 534. Fox News. We report. You decide.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagil walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets and flyers, it's Minuteman Press down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Updated weather forecast for today. It looks like we'll have periods of rain and drizzle throughout the daytime. The temperature is almost steady throughout the Thursday afternoon. Mid-50s, north winds at 10 to 15. Occasional rain and drizzle for this evening. Then overnight, we'll get into a little bit of clearing, and it turns colder with our nighttime lows in the mid-30s. And a frost advisory in effect from 2 a.m. till 10 a.m. on Friday, especially in northern suburbs. Daytime on Friday, look for a sunny day. Temperatures will be cool, though, only in the lower 50s. Clear to partly cloudy at night in the upper 30s. And Saturday's looking mostly cloudy with a chance of some rain. Temperatures in the upper 40s. Sunday sunshine, lower 50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
This is America's great community radio station.
Really seems to be in touch with the heartbeat of the city.
AM 1460 WVOX.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. I just wanted to finish up that review really quickly. When Dr. King, we were talking about the Mountaintop, is the play, the Broadway play with Samuel Jackson and Angela Bassett. When King was speaking, he was actually speaking sadly about white men. He says they hate so easily and we love too much. So then Kameh catches herself in random philosophy and she admits she's speaking nonsense. And King says, nonsense coming out of a pretty woman's mouth is not nonsense. It's poetry. I like that. After the drama, the message one takes away is pass on the baton. Yes, Dr. King did his part. Yes, Barack Obama is a black United States president. Yes, other people of color have stood tall in the passage of history. But each person must do what he can and what she can, take the baton and pass it on. Angela Bassett's performance is a tour de force. The Mountaintop runs until January 16th with Mr. Jackson. Not sure if it continues without him. Check it out. Playing on Broadway at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater, a unique Broadway experience well worth your attention. You will not feel that you spent your money in vain. My guest today is James Gleick, author of five previous books. The sixth, which we have here, is called The Information. In it, Mr. Gleick traces the history of communication from African drums to sophisticated instant communication around the world. Welcome, James Gleick.
I'm happy to be here, but it's not Gleick, it's Glick.
Oh, my goodness. I even told my engineer to say Gleick. I beg your pardon, sir. Okay. Basically, I know you have given this subject much thought, so share with us in layman's language, what do you mean by information and how is it quantified?
Well, luckily, information is a layman's word. It was always a layman's word, and of course, it was always sort of a fuzzy word, right? Information used to mean something like news or instructions, and it was only in the middle of the 20th century that scientists began to take it over, and that's really where my book begins, with the story of the scientists at Bell Labs in 1948, at the same time that the transistor was being invented, who created something called information theory, in which they spoke of information as a very specific scientific quantity, which could be measured using a new unit of measure, which we know under the name bit. A bit is a choice. It's yes or no. It's on or off in our computer circuits. And it's really the fundamental principle of our age. All of the stuff that surrounds us, all of the hardware and the software and the devices we carry in our pockets and the activity that you and I are engaging in right now, all of these are about information as scientists redefined it for us.
Okay, but before that, you give an interesting exposition of African drums. And in fact, you devote much thought, many words, to that means of communication. Now, that was also information, too. Now, how sophisticated is the information which can be communicated in this way? Can one just basically say, Barbara's house burned down? Or can Barbara ask, do I look fat in this dress?
With talking drums?
With drums, yes.
It's true that after beginning with this moment of scientific history, I then jump back and look at past information technologies, because I guess the premise of my book is that we're all very sophisticated about information now, thanks to what the scientists have told us. We've internalized their lessons, even if we don't specifically know about them. And we know that there were previous technologies of information that are in the same family as our computers and our pocket devices and everything else. And those include the printing press and even the invention of the alphabet itself and less well-known forms of communication, including the African so-called talking drums.
So, but when I think of information, you know, I think of actually a communication of something that is useful. Not, I mean, yeah, you can say a bit is information, and sure, it's quantified that way, but it doesn't do anything for me. So like the proverbial tree falling in the forest, if there's no ear, is there really sound? If there is no receiver, is it really information? So one can answer the former with sound is vibration and therefore sound regardless. But if there's no conscious or, let's say, sentient mind, is information really extant in that moment? Certainly if you read a passage from Shakespeare and there's a dog there, you have a consciousness but not a sentient mind. Would you say information exists in that context?
Yes. One of the things that we've discovered is that we humans are not the center of the universe or even the informational universe. And information, in a very real way, precedes us and exists without us. And not only that, we're made of information. Because, and this is another part of the story I tell, after the invention of information theory in the late 1940s, look what was happening in molecular biology. We all know the story of Watson and Crick discovering DNA and the molecular structure, the double helix that underlies the genetic code. But what we don't always pay attention to is the fact that it is literally a genetic code. And what DNA is all about information. It's a molecule that stores information and converts it from one form to another, and stores all of the information that's necessary to create an organism, even a human being. So there was information of all kinds even before there were humans like us.
Okay, well, from the first bacteria, I'm sure when they evolved into slightly higher protists or whatever, information was being transmitted, and more was available to be transmitted if you want to speak of it as actually elements like bits or genes.
But you're making a good point, I think, and that is that we care about some kinds of information more than other kinds. And one thing that happened when scientists defined information was that their definition was dry, and it didn't depend at all on what the meaning of a message
right.
was. Let's say a string of random bits was still information, but the information that you and I care about is information that carries meaning. And this is our modern predicament. It's why the last word of my subtitle is a flood. We are now, thanks to the information revolution, surrounded by all kinds of information, much of which we know is not useful to us. So the challenge we face is how to deal with information in all of its many forms, which unfortunately include misinformation and disinformation.
Well, much information is also just useless to anybody. It's for instance, gossip. What is the value of gossip? Some people love it. It's valued, but it has no value. Other animals, for instance, will communicate much more essential information than we do. We bandy about nonsense, but animals will just seem to only reach out when there's something of importance to share. Fear, mating, territorial. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I hear a lot of tweets. That is the old-fashioned kind of tweets from birds in trees, and I don't know whether they're gossiping or. Certainly, occasionally, as you say, they're sending out important warnings or they're letting the birds know where the food is, but maybe they're just singing the way we do. And in our new forms of communication, including Twitter, certainly can't say that everything that people say is important or valuable. Maybe not even a small fraction of what people say is important, but after all, we're people, and we like to communicate, and I certainly don't think it's my job to make value judgments about how other people choose to use their faculties of communication.
Well, I do the same thing, and I catch myself sometimes and say, why do I talk so much? And
there might be people listening to us who are thinking right now, well, this is just noise. Let's move on to some useful gossip.
Well, I certainly hope not. You spend a certain amount of time speaking of Ada, the Countess of Lovelace, and her relationship with Charles Babbage, who was actually Edgar Allan Poe was influenced by. Ada was apparently a very special woman, you quote her as evaluating her qualities. Was this a rant? Or an honest evaluation of her qualities? I can read what she says here. I have your book in front of me. She says, firstly, I owing to some peculiarity in my nervous system, I have perceptions of some things which no one else has, or at least very few, if any. Some might say an intuitive perception, etc. Secondly, my immense reasoning faculties. Thirdly, the power not only of throwing my whole energy and existence into whatever I choose, but also bring to bear on any one subject or idea a vast apparatus from all sorts of apparently irrelevant and extraneous sources. I can throw rays from every quarter of the universe into one vast focus. This is a quote from your book. That's James Glick's book called The Information. Is she ranting, or was she really that extraordinary human being?
She sounds a little crazy, doesn't she? I'm so glad you brought up Ada Byron.
Okay.
Ada Lovelace. She's really one of my favorite figures.
Well, then, rather than have you start something, I have to cut you off. Let's take our break, and when we come back, we will speak about Ada. How's that sound, Mr.
Perfect.
Okay. Okay, you are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Lebensold. The program is Environmentally Sound. On the phone with me is author James Glick. If you're listening in Blue Eye, Possum Grape, or Romance, Arkansas, Scarface, California, Sopchoppy, Florida, Kickapoo, Illinois, Ballstown, Buda, or Bee Hunter, Indiana, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live, and we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Stocks surging on Wall Street following world markets north, which are optimistic about a solution to the European debt crisis.
European leaders agreed to another Greece bailout. Eurozone countries and the International Monetary Fund will provide $140 billion in rescue loans. The deal also requires banks to wipe out half of Greece's debt.
Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti, the no-fly zone over Libya getting lifted more than 7 months after allies imposed it as they prepared to take action against Muammar Gaddafi. Meanwhile, word that some of the ex-leader's inner circle are surfacing.
Muammar Gaddafi's former intelligence chief and one of his sons both offering to surrender, according to reports quoting a Libyan official. Both are indicted for crimes against humanity. Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, is said to be on the run in Libya's southern desert. He wants a plane, the official says, plus unspecified assurances.
Fox Radio's Alistair Wanklin. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Here's a special message from Whitney Radio. The Broadcasters Foundation of America and Fordham University Press are making available a limited quantity of signed first edition copies of William O'Shaughnessy's brand new book, Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Only just now arriving in bookstores coast to coast for $35. Copies of the new Bill O'Shaughnessy book have arrived at WVOX and WVIP in Westchester. For every $35 donation to the Broadcasters Foundation of America, you'll receive a signed, personally inscribed first edition copy of Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Character profiles and heartwarming vignettes of legendary Westchester and New York figures. Jack Newfield, Bob Grant, Ossie Davis, Wellington Mara, Robert Merrill, John Spicer, Larry King, Ned Garrity, Dr. Rich Pisano, Mario Cuomo, Harry Belafonte, and beloved townies like Bill Scolin and John Branca. A dazzling and entertaining tour of Westchester and New York, past and present. You can now pick up signed copies of the brand new Bill O'Shaughnessy Westchester History Book here at our studios in New Rochelle. It makes a great gift for anyone who loves colorful characters and enjoys politics in New York and Westchester. A limited time offer for just $35 to the Broadcasters Foundation of America. Signed copies are available now at WVOX and WVIP. One Broadcast Forum, New Rochelle. Call 914-636-1460 for directions. 636-1460. 636-1460.
Now available as an ebook from your favorite online ebook retailer.
Thanks for making us the official Listen at Workstation. AM 1460, WVOX, New Rochelle, and WVOX Worldwide.
1460, WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with author James Glick. Augusta Ada Byron King. We just spoke briefly about her. James, what would you like to say about her?
She was, first of all, the daughter of the great poet Lord Byron, but he left his wife and baby, and he left England before she was 1 year old, and so she never knew him. But she grew up knowing that she was his daughter, this man of great imagination, and wondered whether she had inherited any of his imaginative qualities, which in fact she had. Also, she was a brilliant natural mathematician, and had tutors. She was lucky enough to be rich, so her mother provided tutors for her and developed some of her mathematical skills, but she was unlucky enough to be female in 1800s England, and if you were a woman in England, you weren't allowed to attend university, much less belong to professional societies, wow, mathematicians and so forth. So she couldn't publish mathematics. She couldn't even really study formal mathematics. She, however, had the good fortune to meet Charles Babbage, who was a great mathematician and a kind of curious character of the time.
And he respected her talent.
He understood right away that she had the mental capacity to understand what he was doing, which was creating a giant calculating machine that was a sort of prototype of the modern computer. And they started working together, and it turned out really that we can see in retrospect, no one knew this at the time, that Ada Byron understood Babbage's computer, its potential, even better than he did. He was thinking of it as a machine to manipulate numbers. She was thinking in grander terms. She saw that if you could manipulate numbers and store them in memory and operate on them and process them, you could treat the numbers as symbols, and a computer, she didn't use that word, could also operate on words, and it could operate on music. She let her imagination run free, and she also devised ways of programming this machine. She really, it's fair to say, invented modern computer programming.
Really? The mechanical device or just the concept?
She did it in her head. He had prototypes of the mechanical device, but the machine got to be so big and unwieldy that it was never successfully constructed.
Yeah, you have a picture here. It looks like a bunch of gears that is almost impossible to understand.
Well, it's gigantic. There's a version of one of his machines, the difference engine, that was constructed in our time that's on display in London at the Science Museum, and there's another version of it that some computer people constructed in Silicon Valley. So it's possible to see it, and it's possible to know that it would have worked, but it didn't work in his time. And so she had to do this this computer programming, in effect, in her head and with a pen and paper.
So kind of like Einstein, thought experiment.
It's a really staggering feat of intellectual achievement, and was completely unrecognized at the time, as I say, because she was a woman and because it didn't have any practical application. The machine at that time was a failure. It's only in retrospect, she was rediscovered in our era, in the computer era, when computer scientists went back and looked for the early foundations of their business, and they saw that Babbage and Ada Lovelace had really been their predecessors, patron saints in a way.
Interesting. So they do acknowledge her even today.
They do, today more than ever. And you read an example of something she wrote privately to herself. It's heartbreaking to read her diaries and her letters. It's really a tragic story. She died also of a very painful death from cancer at a young age in her 30s.
Yeah.
She deserves to be better known.
She was treated with opium as laudanum and marijuana. And,
yeah.
That is such a shame. But, of course, Mozart died really young, too. So who is to say?
Who's to say?
What else would have come out of them? You're on your way to Amsterdam, if I get that right. Are you not?
That's true.
In 4 days, October 31st and November 1st, you have stuff going on in there. And
You know my schedule better than
I read your website.
the information has just been published in Dutch, in a bunch of languages. And I'm going to go over to Amsterdam to talk about it a little bit.
Do you speak?
So I hope you have many listeners there in Amsterdam.
Well, I hope so. Certainly they can be if they log on to www.wvox.com. They certainly can be. do you speak the language or do you?
Not at all.
So you speak in English out there.
I'm going to be speaking in English. And luckily, the Dutch tend to speak English very well.
Okay.
I'm ashamed of my failure to speak Dutch, which I find a very difficult language, even though superficially it looks very much like English.
Well, there are many languages, and it behooves everyone to know at least some English, but it doesn't behoove everyone to know a little bit of every language.
Well, I don't know if it's fair for us to advise the rest of the world that it behooves them to know English. It's true that English is spoken more widely than any other language in the world.
If you're going to have a second language, I would think English would be the one. Like, I love French, but I concentrate more on Spanish because I'm in New York and Spanish is more useful. So it's just practical, actually.
Well, that's true. But I think in general, it's a shame how weak Americans are at speaking foreign languages, and I'm embarrassed about it myself.
I agree. Americans are arrogant, and they think everyone should do what they do. I agree with that. Then you're on to Dublin on the 3rd. What are you going to speak about? Just about the book?
Well, in Dublin, luckily, they do speak English.
Yes.
I can understand the Irish almost all the time. Yes, I'm going to talk about the book there, too.
Excellent. So how many...
Cities I love, Amsterdam and Dublin, just beautiful cities.
I've never been to Dublin. Amsterdam floated my boat for sure. How many parts scientist are you and how many parts author? Because you write about scientific things. They just roll right off like you really have a deep understanding. Who are you in those terms? Thank you
for saying that. I'm no part scientist at all. I was an English major in college, and then I became a journalist. And all I know about science is that I've always been fascinated by it. I don't have any formal training in it.
But you do seem to understand.
I started writing about science as a reporter, and I covered science for the New York Times, and I wrote magazine pieces about it, and I interviewed some great scientists, which was always fun for me before I started writing books. Science is so... We all know how important it is to our culture. I think we know that now more than ever, and largely because of this information revolution. You know, there was a time when we knew that physics was important to the culture, and the reason we knew it was because of the atomic bomb, which changed the political landscape and the psychological landscape of our world in the mid and late 20th century. But now science is having effects in what may be an even more profound way because of the development of the communications networks that are so much the fabric of the world our children are going to grow up in.
Well, and yet there are so many people who poo-poo science and they just go with their religious training, and they, whenever science doesn't suit them, they deny it, like, for instance, climate change,
It's a weird fact of the political landscape of this country at the moment that some politicians, for their own purposes, are finding it convenient to act as though science isn't important or isn't trustworthy.
Yeah, and a lot of people go buy it.
Yeah, and I think that's a shame. But I guess in the long run, I'm optimistic. We tend really to believe scientists more than figures, don't we?
I hope you're right. I do. I don't know. All right, so this is your 6th book, James, is it not?
It is.
And do you have another book or something else, some other project?
I don't know exactly what I'm going to do next.
Okay.
It's getting to be time for me to think about it, but this book took a really long time to write. It was the biggest project I've ever done. It took more than 7 years, so...
Well, you got 426 pages here. So anyway, it's a very interesting book. At times, you got to read passages a few times to get it, because your mind works intricately and specifically. And it's a little hard for me to follow everything. But I certainly recommend that anybody who's listening who has any intellect and interest in stuff should read The Information by James Gleick. And while it's pronounced Gleick, it's spelled G-L-E-I-C-K. James, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. Enjoy your trip.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. I would like to thank James Gleick for joining us today. I believe that 99% of what we see and hear is meaningless babble. Most of what we say is simply to exercise our indolence. And now we have cell phones, so we can project that meaningless babble to everyone within a large radius, shamelessly, apparently. There is information, but it is like mining for gold nuggets among tons of rock and dust. Alas, I am not holier than thou. I do it all the time. Curses. Our thought for the week. This is the land of Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Lincoln, and you. Honor these men. Honor your country. Allow the wealth to be spread around. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A. Kudos, William O'Shaughnessy. I'm not sure if Howard Sterman is here. I don't see him. I hope he is. He is one of the best broadcasters we have. I am Bob Lebensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.